So we were going to hit record as soon as Jimmy got on the call because he's been awake for about, what, 6 minutes now?
Like four. Oh, 4 minutes.
Okay, yeah.
I had to make a coffee.
Oh.
I woke up at 9:05 and I panicked and I texted you guys. I said 3 minutes. And then when I got on camera with you guys, I said, let me do some detective work, see why I didn't wake up. And it's exactly what I always suspect. I set the clock for 7:45 p.m. 9 a.m. So I'll be on time tonight when my alarm goes off.
You'll be figuring out at like 7:45 tonight, you're like, why is there an alarm set? What am I supposed to be doing right now?
Yeah, exactly. Because last night it went off at 7 for the town board meeting that I went to.
Are you mayor yet of your town?
No. I was going to get involved in town politics, but something inside me said, don't do it. And I didn't.
I think everything inside of me would have said, don't do it, not just something.
Yeah. No, and I didn't. And Rob Rojas moved to my neighborhood, and he was here over the weekend at his house, and so happened to be a town board meeting last night. I said, come on, let's go to town board meeting. I'll show you what this is all about and why we shouldn't get involved. And we went, and it was a couple of little controversial topics, but you know, it's like everybody's town board meeting. It's the same as always. My town's so small, though. There's usually a handful of people show up. 10 people, maybe less. It's not like the town board meetings where you see there's like a big arena and a microphone stand. We're all in a room that's like 25 by 30 feet. That's it. So it could get good. Sometimes it gets good.
When you say it gets good.
Yeah. I mean, that's small enough that you can't blend in. Like, if everybody knows that you are there or not there, I guess.
Yeah. So we did that, and what have I been up to this week? Is that what you asked?
Yeah,
I've been working on the graveyard house. We got the floor joists in that extension that I've been working on, so that's a big step for me. It's really starting to feel like something, and not just an extended extension on this house. And the foundation's getting finished up, and things are moving along there.
So you told us about the foundation wall like falling in. That's all fixed. And
that was falling in because we kind of we prodded and poked at it to see how good it is, and it wasn't great. So it's a good thing we prodded and poked at it, because now it's going to be fortified once it's all put back. And I got the floor in, and now I got to figure out how to insulate that section of the floor. I'm promoting a local lumberyard, this company around here called G&H. It's very local. They only have two of them. And so he's become a little bit of a partner on this project. He's been supplying me with stuff. So that's really cool. And so I did a little story on them the other day, just showing off the floor. I usually don't do that too much, but I'm doing it for them so I can tag them. And the next is the insulation in the floor, and then the planking. It's every little step. Got to stop and think about what's the best way, most interesting way to do it. So, and then also, more importantly, I'm working on the barn in the backyard, because that's a little bit more of a priority because it's in my backyard. That place could sit undone. There's like so much to do. The barn in the backyard. I made a deal. I don't want to say just yet, but I got a siding company's coming up on board with a couple of famous YouTubers to do the siding. They said it's a green light, so that's going to be cool. So I don't want to say their names, everybody knows them, but I'll tell everybody who they are when they show up. But there's no date yet. Hopefully that'll get done by the fall. And then my next video that I'm going to start working on today, I'm going to start building the doors for that barn. It has 6, 7, 8 doors on it, so I gotta get to the getting and do those doors. Oh, and I made that heavy table. If you guys saw I made a very heavy table out of a big slab from Costa Rica. And I made the steel base. And my neighbor has a forklift telehandler kind of thing. And he's like, oh, yeah, we'll get it upstairs. Just give me a call. And I was like, let me see how far I can go without bothering him. Because he has to drive his machine like 4 miles on the street to come to me. And I was like, I don't want to bother Eli. Eli's been kind of, he's in the video actually. He's guy helps me flip the table over. I kind of want to bug them unless I really have to. And so I was like, let me see if I can get far, how far I can go making my backyard forklift out of a backhoe. Anyway, obviously it was successful. I was able to get it and pulled up into the shop. And then he comes by and he's like, why didn't you call me? I was like, I don't want to bother you. I said, plus, personal challenge. I wanted to see how far I can go. So that's good. That was up and in. And that table there was like a featured section in that room. And so it's prompting me to keep moving. You know, every little cool thing that I do, that it's like a little success, is prompting me to keep going, keep going, keep going.
So the plan for that upper room or whatever is still like the clean kind of sewing leather area?
Yep.
Is
that what that's for? The idea. As long as birds keep finding their way up there, I'll go up there and left the place clean. I go up there and then there's bird poop all over the steel chairs that I made and all over the tabletop. So every once in a while I go up there and I leave the doors wide open because there will be like three birds up there. So that's why I have to put doors on the place. The birds come in and they fly up the stairwell and then they can't get out.
That's one of the reasons people use doors, yeah.
Yeah. So that's, I gotta get the doors on. But yeah, that's gonna be a clean room.
So it's just like the downstairs is just open to the outside?
Yeah, at the moment, yeah. Oh. It was somewhat sealed up for the winter, but since the summer is here, I've been, and then today probably I'm gonna, the doors were, when we put the siding on, the zip siding, which is like the OSB on the outside of the building, we just covered a lot of the doors. We left the two big end doors open. And so now I'm going to use a router and cut open the doors in preparation for having actual proper doors put in. So now there's going to be a lot more room for the birds to fly in until I finish the doors in the next 2 weeks.
So have I'm a sure whole they'll appreciate that.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what I've been up to.
Awesome. Well, go ahead and finish waking up.
Yes, thank you.
David, what have you been up to?
I'm going
to
lay down.
Okay. Take a nap.
Please do. So my next video is going to be these kitchen cabinets that I did not make. How interesting is that? Yeah. When we did our bathroom renovations a year and a half ago, we had a dedicated laundry room made, and our washer and dryer got moved from the back entrance to its new dedicated laundry room. And so we have this entryway that is just kind of open, and our kitchen is really tiny. Like there's no counter space to work on anything. So we decided we needed a little coffee bar in this entryway that'll open up some kitchen space so we can actually cook. Excuse me. And I was going to build everything, and then I decided I really, really don't want to do this. Kitchen cabinets. I would be working on it for 6 months.
It's such a pain if you're not into it. Some people think it's a great challenge and they love it, but yeah, if you're not
into it. I just wasn't into it. And I've been on this kick lately where I'm like, I just want to make things that I want to make. So we had this company, I think they're called cabinets.com, such a generic name, but we had them, we gave them dimensions and they designed these cabinets and they shipped it to us. And I made the countertop.
These are really pretty.
Thank you. Yeah. I mean, they're not even, they're acrylic. They're like this bright orange acrylic cabinets on these pure white walls. So it really is kind of a statement and stands out.
Yeah, it's very pretty. It looks nice.
So it's something I couldn't easily have done anyway.
Yeah, the finish is so complicated to get a beautiful glossy finish like that. It looks great.
So I made the countertop, and I wasn't even going to make a video on that because it's just three pieces because it wraps around a corner. But I'm glad I did because I ran into some challenges. And then I decided, you know what? The whole video is going to be about buying versus making, the guilt of buying. I don't know if you guys feel guilty for buying things that you could make, but I do all the time. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so that's the video is...
A lot of times when you're buying something, you're obviously buying something, but you're buying time.
Yes.
For a priority.
Oh, so yeah. Like
people say to me all the time when they see the barn that I just talked about, they're like, did you build this whole thing? I'm like, no, I paid to have it built. And so I don't have the time to build this. It'd be here forever. It'd be like one man in East Durham builds a barn. You know, they do a documentary on me when I'm
and
like,
and dies before he gets to use it.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. Well, yeah, they do look great. And I think it's interesting that they are a material and finish that you wouldn't be... I mean, you could maybe do it yourself, but it wouldn't make sense to do it yourself.
Yes.
So buying that in that shape to look that way is the best option. I mean, so...
Yeah. Yeah.
Hmm. Cool. Let's see. What have I been doing? Oh, I made a hot dog. I made an inflatable hot dog.
I have questions.
Okay. Go for it.
What do your neighbors think of you? And did they watch you jump on the hot dog?
Oh, yeah. Of course they did. So my neighbors, you know, this was my grandfather, my grandparents' house. So I came here as a kid. The neighbors next door lived in that house before my grandparents built this house. And so I've known them my entire life. Life? I've said lives because I was thinking of them. My entire life. And their daughter was actually in school with me. And so we're friends. And so, like, I've known my neighbors since I was a kid. So they watched me grow up and they know my parents. And, you know, my they knew my grandparents really well and stuff. So they knew what they were in for when we moved in to the house. And they're awesome. They're, like, super patient with us and the kids. And they're gracious with their pool and, you know, their backyard because they've got, like, some swings, and they had a big trampoline for their grandkids that our kids started using, and then eventually they just gave it to us, and so it, like, moved over the line into our yard, and now it's our trampoline. So yeah, they're pretty great, and they don't ever they may think I'm weird, but they don't ever say anything like that. They're always just really kind to us. So they probably do think I'm weird. Yeah, so I made a hot dog, and, you know, I don't want to get complainy. That's not the intent. But it was one of those things where, you know, I made a thing that I thought was really funny and we had a great time. I learned a lot of stuff making it. We had a great time making the video. I think the video is really funny. Like, Forby did, we did this whole sequence of, like, jokiness, and then we added a portal that opens up because of the hot dog and all this stuff. And, like,
that was fun.
It was a 10 out of 10 video. Like, just like the one last week. It just, the comments were great. People, like, this is hilarious, this is fun, it's good to see you do things like this. So, good reaction to it, just not a lot of reaction to it, you know? And that's always just kind of frustrating.
So, yeah.
Yeah, but
that's just the way it is.
Yeah. You gotta remind yourself if, let me see. I happen to have the video, my YouTube's open, so you get 80-something thousand. If 80-something thousand people came by to say, hey, Link, can I see your pool floaty?
Yeah. Yeah.
To your backyard with the pool, you'd be like, oh, come on in.
Well, yeah, but 10,000 of those people are just there to judge it and tell you what you just there to
tell you.
That's fine. That's fine. All the people that don't like me on this side, people that had fun in the middle.
People that are actually genuinely
curious in this line.
We had a conversation about that yesterday, and my initial reaction, when you see the 10 out of 10, I think that's the problem. I think it's a relativistic, like, a comparison thing, and that doesn't really need to be there. Because if I didn't see that 10 out of 10, I would see the 80,000 number and go, like, goodness gracious, that's a
You're
lot.
You're not the only one that feels this way.
I solved that problem by, I don't look anymore. I don't look at the stats anymore.
Yeah, I don't want to. And I try not to. I look at it way less than I used to, but there's still that, I did a thing, I want to see how it's doing, you know, I hope it's doing well. And then you look at the thing and you're like, ah, it's not whatever I wanted, whatever my expectation was, however realistic or not, it's not that thing. And yeah, I think if I didn't see the 10 out of 10, that relative thing to how the last things have done, and even that is not a lot of information. It could have had 2 views fewer than the one for it, and it would still be 10 out of 10, even though it was effectively the same. You know what I mean?
It would be 9 out of 10, which is just as bad. So just,
yeah, but we were talking about that and kind of just, you know, like, what is the benchmark? And why do we have this benchmark of success that's all about numbers? And how could I change my mindset to make that benchmark around response? Because the number doesn't... I mean, even just what you were joking about, the people in the backyard, even that, 80,000 doesn't tell you how many of those people are mad or how many of those people loved it, or how many of those people just happened to have it on in the background and didn't even watch it because what, you know what I mean? It doesn't give you anything. Comments that tell you what they thought or ask questions, that's engagement that tells you. So why can't I shift my thinking to see success through the lens of response versus metric? And I don't want to do that. You know,
just stop looking completely.
I guess so.
That's what I do.
You know, I have bills to pay and that type of stuff.
You know why I stopped looking? Because there's nothing, action, reaction. Nothing seems to change. I still make videos. I feel that are the same. The comments are usually extremely very, very positive.
Yeah.
I don't even get any negative comments anymore because I just don't. But when you start getting negative comments, I believe it's a sign of, okay, my video is making it into the deep part of the ocean. It's
getting it into other, yeah. Yeah.
So yeah, when I do see negative comments, I'm almost like, okay, the algorithm's feeding this to people that don't know me, which is great. Yeah. So when you do get negative comments, it's you're starting to make some inroads. That's why I just don't look anymore, because I keep thinking, oh, if I do this, or if I do that, or if I change this, nothing matters. Nothing seems to work. And, you know, every once in a while, Adam is my consultant in the background. He's like, what if we do this? Or can I try the thumbnail? I go, I don't care anymore. I go, do whatever you want. Nothing seems to make a difference, you know, until the youth discover us again. You know, that's really
the youth. Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, also, I have to remind myself that there's this river of content, this river of attention and time that is just constantly flowing. Yeah, and we are everything that we create, which is, you know, this is a good and a bad thing, depending on how you look at it, but everything we create just gets dropped in that river and then gets washed away. And from one perspective, it kind of sucks because, like, hey, I worked hard on a thing and I want people to see it, and then it just goes downstream and it's gone. The other perspective is, hey, the thing that I made didn't work. Nobody was into it. Cool. It's gone. And now I get to make another thing. You know? Yeah. And so...
No, I've said this in the past.
The same situation.
I look at it as like another book in the library that I've written.
Yeah.
And there it is. It's going to be there for all history to see. You know, this book might not be popular this week, but it could be popular somewhere down the road. And it's just another brick in the wall. It's a quote.
Yeah.
Pink Floyd.
I'm pretty sure my hot dog's never going to be popular down the road, but
it might be.
That's all right. It's okay. It might be.
You know, there's a lot of universities and high schools that use our videos to teach kids. And
that's true.
You know, imagine you don't know. Yeah, this is what helps me stay positive. One kid might see your video, and maybe it's not monetary. Obviously, it's important, but you know, when you think about it in a grander way, you say one person's going to see my video. And that one person's going to change the course of their lives, and then they're going to become something great. And they wouldn't have become that, or at least not in that particular context, if I didn't do this. And, you know, in a positive way, you don't want to think anything negative. So when you think, oh, I didn't get 250,000 views in a day, but the comments are so positive that you can't help but think someone's going to try this somewhere down the road, and it's going to change the course of someone's life in a good way. And so you just got to think of yourself as Mother Teresa and not just a YouTuber that's trying to pay for his family. Live on the streets of Calcutta with no shoes.
I don't know
if
I can quite do that, but yeah.
I'm just being silly.
Yeah, but it's one of those things. The whole point being, it was a fun thing to make. It was we were really happy
having a lot
with
of
the
fun.
Thing. And when it didn't, you know, when that doesn't turn into what you ever, whatever you expect or hope it turns into, there's always a little like, ah. But if I stay in that feeling of like, ugh, for more than a day, then it's eating into the potential, the future for potential of whatever I'm going to next. So I had to kind of just like.
Your video came out the same day as mine, about 3 or 4 days ago, and I just opened mine up. I'm at 60,000 views. Whereas, for like 8 years, every video I put out got 100,000 views in the first 24 hours.
Yeah.
Now it's 3 days and I haven't even broken 75,000 views.
Yeah.
So I just think it's just a glut of attention. It's just too much attention, trying to get too much attention from too many people.
Yeah.
There's too many videos to watch.
There's a ton of reasons for it. Yeah. Yeah.
And 8 years ago, there was not nearly as much choice. If you wanted to see something being made, you had to watch Jimmy or Bob. That was it.
Yep.
Well, yeah, and there's a lot of good stuff being made now, too, yeah, which is another really interesting thing. Like, a couple of years ago, I had started to get this feeling that, like, just everything that is happening on YouTube, you know, outside of the noble work that we're doing, everything is, like, Mr. Beast, just over the top, just kind of brainless entertainment stuff, you know? I could just see, it felt like that's where, like, this is all going to go that way, and that's the only thing that's ever going to get up front. And I think that bubble popped a bit. I think that there's always going to be, you know, reality TV and stuff like that. But I think as that bubble popped, the stuff that has come to fill that gap is, like, really high quality, different type of stuff. And whereas before, I felt like we were maybe competing with Mr. Beast type content, now I think we're competing with stuff that, like, deserves a lot of viewership. You know what I mean? I think
no, when
some,
you find out that Mr. Beast has, really, like, 130 employees, and, you know, they're all fighting with each other, and every other day somebody's wrapped up in some controversy, and I only know about this because I watch Philly D. You know, every other one of his headlines has something to do with one of Mr. Beast's employees, you know. Yeah. I mean, you think about that, and it's like, I'm just still one guy after all these years shooting, editing, and doing my own thing.
Yeah.
And I'll never be Mr. Beast or Whistling Diesel. It's just never going to happen. And I wouldn't want it to happen. It's just too much pressure. I like waking up and not having to talk to anybody. I can't imagine if there's seven people outside waiting, like, what's our video going to be this week?
Except today you had to wake up and immediately talk to the two.
Yeah, well, that's because I don't know how to set my alarm.
You're welcome.
That's funny.
Anyway, yes. So my video, it did a thing. It's on, it's down the river.
Does all this talk we're doing, this YouTube behind the baseball, inside baseball talk, lead to
behind the baseball?
Does that lead to our conversation about compromise?
Sure. Yeah. What you got?
Some way, somehow. I just, this morning when we were kicking around ideas, and I thought about compromise and how making things is always a compromise. As a free artist, just literally in the 1950s, alcoholic like Jackson Pollock, just literally throwing paint at a canvas. Was he compromised? Maybe. Versus, you know, us as commercial artists making things for commercials and promoting products. How much of a compromise is it? And I brought up as an example, and I'll bring it up again, the idea how certain weeks we have advertisements in our videos, and there's certain compromises we need to make. We want to make sure the advertiser's happy, even though they only really care about their 60 seconds, but they want to make sure in the context of the entire video that there's nothing that puts everybody in a compromising position. So we got to make sure that things work that everybody wants, and whether it's super subtle or whether it's like, you must remove these whole 5 minutes because it's against our policy. I never go that hard into anything, but the idea of just compromise day to day. You know, I think we all pretty much live a pretty good life of not having to deal with too many compromises when it comes to, imagine if all three of us were in a corporate job. You know, we've all had experiences with that. How bad does that suck? And, you know, you'd be like, you got to come in on Saturday morning, and we got to do the TPS reports. You're like, okay. Okay, I guess I'll do that.
Yeah.
Or, you know, when everyone's having the companies have, like, these downsizing analysts come in, and you got every one at a time, you justify your job. I take the reports and I put them on his desk. What was that?
Yeah. He's talking to the Bobs.
Yeah, he goes, I take the reports from here and I put them over there. And he's like getting angry, trying to justify why. He goes, so if somebody else did it, or if he went over there and got him, you wouldn't be needed. Anyway, compromise. How does compromise affect you guys? Does it?
Well, I mean, compromise, you can think of that. When you brought that up, you were thinking of it in one context, I think, and I was thinking of it in a different, because you could look
obviously
at the word.
Honestly, I was thinking of it where I used to live with somebody. Now I don't live with anybody, so the context of that, you know, this,
right?
Like, I don't have.
Well,
that
there's like concession and compromise, which I guess maybe I don't know what the actual definitions and stuff are, but when I think of them, concession being like I'm giving up stuff to meet you in the middle,
right?
Versus, I guess it's no different. There seems to be like one negative perspective there of, I'm going to compromise my vision, my intention, my whatever, to get this thing done. The other thing would be two people who are finding a middle ground that is fair, that is a compromise between the two of them.
For a greater good.
There's no difference between those two, but it feels like there's a positive and a negative one.
I mean, you could do compromise for greater good, and I mean, I don't want it to sound negative all the time.
Yeah.
But I realize in my life, I haven't had too much compromise, especially now since I used to be in the toy business, obviously, and compromise was, even like, you know, I'm kind of dabbling a little bit with Walmart again lately. I showed it on my Patreon, and I'm not quite as involved as I was the first time around with Walmart. I'm actually not involved at all. In fact, it's just like a royalty situation. But long story short is, it's like, should we put this piece in and this and that? And I'm just looking at everything, and I'm like, I guess so. Like, can we? It's too late now to change the packaging, is it? They've already made 10,000. All right, just make it. What am I going to do now? Oh, it's in the paint aisle and they're caulking because they're trying something new? I guess so. All right. Oh, it's $40 at retail? Really? I guess so. You know, this is like all these reasons why that first Walmart program didn't work. But people who are supposedly smarter than me made all these decisions, and I said, okay. Nothing's sold. I think
the compromising doesn't even need to involve another party. It could just be you compromising.
That's 100% true. That's really true.
I want to be done with this thing, so I'm going to rush the last 10%. Or, I mean, anytime you make something that's going to be seen by somebody else, whether it's social media or your family, you might be compromised to make decisions that are going to please other people's eyes.
Yeah. I made a point in an early video. It was only in the last couple of weeks. I can't remember exactly which video it is. But in the video, I said I was going to do this, but then I was going to do that. But I didn't know if I should do this, and I was going to do that. And then I said, the bigger point was, as artists, when we work alone, we see all these things that we think should be, or maybe it could be, it couldn't be. And then when we finally make a decision, we have to remember nobody knows that process.
Yeah.
Nobody knows that this leg would have looked better if it was closer to the inside of the table versus right at the very corner. And should my table I just made have a 2-inch overhang at each short end, which is something I thought about. So the tabletop looked a little bit longer than the base. The other compromise I made on that table was, and I don't even think I called it out in the video, is that the side skirt of the table on the long side is 3 inches and the side skirt on the short side is 1.5 inches. Is everybody going to notice that? I was going to literally take the long one and take a jigsaw and cut it so it was the same height as the other side. That's 1/4-inch steel. I would have had to cut 7 feet of 1/4-inch steel with a jigsaw.
Ooh.
And I said, let me just weld it together and just see how it looks. And as I'm welding it together and I'm grinding and I'm finishing, I'm like, I completely forgot that I was going to maybe make one side a little bit skinnier versus the long side skinnier than the short side. And then something else while I was in the process of thinking that through before I finished the table, I was like, oh, I could just add to the short side and make it longer so it matches. That's easy to add than to cut away. So this whole process was going on in my head while I was assembling the legs. And then it got to the point where I forgot all about it because I had so many other little nuances to compromise. But you look back and you go, is everyone going to think, oh, the skirt doesn't match the side on the short side and the long side? And they're thinking like, oh my God, the table looks so cool. Look at the beautiful grain pattern and that piece of natural wood that he got.
Yeah. I easily get distracted. And you mentioned cutting the 1/4-inch steel with the jigsaw. I got one of those DeWalt metal cutting circular saws. It has a metal cutting blade in there. It is a game changer with sheet metal. I mean, a 1/4-inch sheet metal is still insanely thick, but it doesn't get hot. It doesn't throw sparks.
Amazing. I actually considered that. I was like, if I have to circ saw this off, I'll go buy that tool right now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's a few brands, and I was thinking of the Milwaukee one. But yeah, exactly. I was like, this would be the perfect opportunity to have that tool. But then I kind of got lost in so many other decisions, and I just kept making sure. I built that whole table in 3 days. Like this time last week, we didn't have a podcast, but I was like, great, more time. I went right out to the shop.
I think there's a lot of
a lot of compromises we make completely within ourselves.
And I think a lot of compromises that I run into are not about, you know, they're not like creative conversations between me and someone else. They're about the time that I have versus what I want to do, or the material that I have or can get versus what I want to do, or the tools that I have versus what I want to do. Mm-hmm. And I know that there's a lot of times where the responses in a video are like, well, why didn't you do this thing? I mean, we all get that. But I think that's born out of this external view of the best possible situation, the best possible way you could have done that would be here, this. Why didn't you do the best? And that's because behind the scenes, behind the camera, along the way to the project, we had to make some compromises. Do I want to learn how to do the best thing? Do I want to spend an extra $500 on the tool that is the one that does the thing? Do I want to wait and pay for this material to show up to be able to do the thing? Or do I want to get it done? That is a compromise. That is a choice between optimal and passable, you know? And I do that constantly because I care way more about getting something functional, getting something finished, move on, usable, than I do it being like ideal. That's just not an important, that's a thing I'm willing to give on pretty easily. I'm willing to compromise finish on something if it does what it's supposed to do, or, you know, even longevity if it does what it's supposed to do, because I know that if I make something that outlives me, it doesn't really matter if it's for me to use. And those are all compromises, and they have nothing to do with morality or, you know, like getting what you want or getting along with people. It's just about how quickly can I get the thing done that I need to get done, or like what makes the most sense. So that's the type of compromise that I run into more than anything. And the response to that in the comments or online, like I have to fight my, well, I just want to justify why I did the thing to you. I really don't have to, you know, like the justification is not important, but that's where I see it. That's where I feel it, is when I make a compromise through material or tool. And then I really want to justify that to the people that are asking legitimate questions about why didn't you do it the ideal way? But I think, you know, the other thing you were talking about, anytime you make stuff for people to see, there's a built-in compromise that you're putting into it, because you are, and this is true, I would think, for all visual artists or even musicians, like you, it's going to have an audience. It's going to have somebody sitting in the coffee shop using the table that you made, you know, whether they know who made it or not, there's still someone who is going to interpret and use the thing or see the thing or hear the thing that you made. And you have to think about that ahead of time. Otherwise, nothing would have usability. There would be no UX design. That is all compromised for the intended audience of the thing that you're making. So, and that probably makes those things better. You know, so
yeah,
the compromise is not always bad.
I think sometimes a compromise can encourage growth, because like the question came from Jimmy living with somebody to Jimmy not living with somebody, so there's less compromise. But when you are building or making something that involves other people, that compromise might seem like a negative, but that compromise actually might make the thing better. And you have another set of ears, another set of eyes looking at something, and you're likely going to do something that you never would have done that improved the thing or pushed the thing forward.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So this may be a dangerous thing to ask. Are there compromises in your work, let's cut it off at work life. Are there compromises in your video life, your work life, that you have made that you look back on and either it was just a bad call or was something you're ashamed of or something that just didn't work out like you expected? Is there something that sticks out to you that you knew going into it was going to be like I don't know, but you did it anyway and it came back to get you or disappoint you?
Yeah, I think
there's several videos that I never looked at.
You know, over the last couple of years, I made the I bought every ad on Facebook, or I bought all the, I bought nothing but Temu stuff. And I knew going into that, like, I am making this video for views. I've compromised what I feel as art for money and views. And I look back on that and I hate those videos now, even though most of them are at a million views.
Right, right,
and, right. Right? And they paid bills. But I don't feel good about them. My last five videos, I've said to myself, I just want to make the things that I want to make, and I'm going to do that. And I've stuck to it, and my last five videos are 8 of 10, 9 of 10, 10 of 10. They're just not performing well, but I feel really good about those videos.
There you go. It's a great example.
I'm going to stick it out. I'm going to keep doing this, and I'm going to see if I can make this work. I want to make the things that I want to make, and I feel like if I find the formula that works for me, it'll work out in the end. But I might have to compromise. I might have to make another Facebook ad video 5 months from now, but I don't want to.
Right. Jimmy, what about you?
I always joke about the videos where I did advertisements for video games. Everybody notoriously knows I never even touched a controller. I never even put a quarter in Mrs. Pac-Man when that was like my contemporary game.
What?
I never did.
You never went to arcades.
One game that I liked when I was a kid, and it's because we stayed at a resort that had free video games. You go downstairs and all the machines were free. There, you didn't have to put quarters in them. It was a game called Tempest. There's like a thing that's like connected to like a spider web, and you spin it. I don't even remember how to play it, but that, and then again, another game was Tetris. That was on. We had the family video console. I never touched it. My sister, my brothers played with it, and the one game that I always would challenge them with is the one where you spin the pieces in space and they fall into space. And those are the only two games I ever played in my whole life. Those are the only two games that pulled me in. But in general, I did a couple of videos for video games. And in the heyday of, you know, our golden age of YouTube, for me, it was like 2018, 2017. Everyone's like, what are you doing? You don't play video games. It's like, doo, 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 doo. But they paid well. It was like the drug dealer coming in, like, hey, just bring this to the schoolyard. It's okay. Yeah, you take this money. And that's kind of how I felt when I did it. That being said, I've been offered some video games recently, and I was like, should I send these to Mark? Mark's my agent. I was like, should I send this to Mark? I think I did send one to him because it seemed legit, and it seemed. But then the script comes in. It's like, you got to take the diddly coins, and if you pay extra, you pay for the doodly dots. And I was like, I'm not reading this.
The problem, understand. Those video games, they always want the ad right up front at the very beginning. And what they don't understand is that kills the video because people leave, and that video is going to get less views over time.
But their ad got, yeah.
I just want to shake them and say, let me put the ad where it belongs. It'll get more eyeballs.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Those are the only things that, and there are a couple of videos that I know I made for time, so I compromised my own creative process for time. And there are a couple of videos that are real, real clinkers. But you look at them, and the views are high because it was in the heyday, and they might have 700,000. I'm like, this is the worst concept. I can't believe I even followed through with it. But it's got hundreds of thousands of views because it was put out at a time when, you know, there was 18 of us making videos. And but that's okay. What, you know, I always look at in air quotes a failed video, failed as far as my artistic integrity or my artistic vision, is just another learning curve. It's just another learning step. Every single time I blacksmith, I learn something new. Every single time I play on the laser cutter, I learn something new. Every single time I use the table saw, I'm like, oh. Yesterday I cut 30 floor joists for this house down the block. And I looked at the scrap, and every piece of scrap had the same exact pattern in it. I'm like, why is that pattern? How did that happen? It was like a little tiny nibble and then a cut. The nibble was further over, so every piece of scrap on the ground, I looked at it, I'm like, what is going on there? What is my, like, what is my nervous habit there? I nibble a little bit, then I cut on the line. And I started paying close attention. It's because I stick the blade in, because it's kind of invisible, because it's spinning so fast. I stick the blade in consciously a little bit further away from the line and then pull it in. And I didn't even realize I was doing it until I saw the scrap on the ground. And every piece had like a little nibble and then a full cut. And that's because I used the circular saw to cut all the joists. And so I'm like, oh, so I'm like finding the line. Oh, I didn't realize that. So these little things you learn, I did that a billion times in my life. I never noticed that I take a little nibble, work my way over to the line, and then cut. So every time you do anything, you learn. I forget the point of the bigger point. But so it's always a compromise.
Yeah.
There you go. That's how I ended that.
I think for me...
What?
Go ahead. Go ahead and answer the question.
Oh, I think for me, the constant compromise, and I mean, this is on most videos, the constant compromise is time, is for time.
Yeah.
I feel like no matter what, how well I plan, no matter what I have available, no matter how well formed an idea is, there's always this feeling of I just have to get it done. Not because of, like, I'm motivated to get it done. I just have to get it out of the way. I have to wrap this thing up so that I can go to the next one. And it's just that the treadmill feeling that we've talked about for 20 years or however long we've been doing this. It's just that, you know, you got to move on to the next thing. And, you know, I've actively worked against that. I cut my video schedule in half to be able to build more time. And even with more time and fewer things to do, at every single project, I still run into at some point this, yeah, it could be better. Yeah, I could do this thing. Yeah, I could order this thing. Yeah, I could think more about it, but I just got to get it out of the way. And I really hate that. I mean, I don't like the fact that I'm constantly just feeling pushed to the next, or I'm pushing myself. That is purely internal, that I'm pushing myself to the next thing, but something I'm always fighting against. As far as, like, compromise, like, in, you said integrity a minute ago, and I know you were talking about, like, artistic integrity, but I think the negative way that I think about compromise has to do with integrity, and that was the thing I couldn't put into words earlier. There's compromise of meeting in the middle, finding common ground, finding the best between two people, and then there is undercutting your own integrity to get something. That's a different kind. That's the negative compromise. But when I heard you say that word, I'm like, that's the thing I couldn't quite put together. So, and I don't have a lot of those. My integrity is very, very important to me. So I don't feel like I've given in there. Artistic integrity, I feel like when I had a team of people, I can think back on many, many situations where I just kind of went, well, if somebody else had an idea or somebody else shot a thing or edited a thing or whatever in a way that I wouldn't have, I was just kind of like, well, I mean, it's not about me, so okay, I guess we'll go with that, you know. And
I was gonna say, we're doing the TV shows, I didn't even bring that up, but there's so much compromise. You know, and you know, working in a team making a video, they jokingly say that a camel is a horse designed by a committee. That's what a camel actually is.
I've never heard that. That's awesome.
That's an oldie. Yeah. A camel is a horse designed by a committee, and that's what a TV show could turn into if there's so many people standing around.
Huh.
Yeah.
Interesting.
But I saw on the commercial shoot that just happened in the backyard, a lot of the producers are getting frustrated because they had to make sure the client was okay, and there was an agency in the middle constantly changing words on the script. And whatever, they had a point. They obviously have humor, and fashion has to make a bigger point. So the bigger point is really the message, which you have to try and dress up in a digestible way with the fancy actor and the fancy setting and all that other stuff. But the most important part is trying to get that message through. So everybody was like, okay, we got to get the message, you know, whatever the message was. So working on
that's an interesting Netflix way to look at it, too, that message was the priority of the entire shoot, of the entire endeavor.
Which is why everybody gritted their teeth. And they, my brother always said it. My brother would always say it. I did 3-4 TV shows with my brother. And whenever he was frustrated, because he would get a lot more frustrated than me, because I would just go with the flow and keep my mouth shut because we were getting paid well. But he was a little bit more of a prima donna, but he would constantly say, we're just selling mortgages and dog food, let's not forget. He would have to say it out loud to remind himself, we're selling mortgages and dog food, but not, this isn't the Museum of Modern Art film division. This is, you know, this isn't an art house film, which there is place for that, but it's not on an HGTV show where people have this regret of buying two comedians making stuff, and the whole time, like, these seats would show up on set holding their chin, watching us trying to be funny, and then they'd leave. And like, yeah, they want less humor and a little bit more technical build stuff. You know, we'd get that message the next day, and be like, okay. Okay.
So if everything we do is a compromise, what is the compromise that we are making for the this podcast right here? I think I have
having to wake
something up. In mind.
Kidding.
But I what did you say?
Having to wake up.
I have, yes, exactly. I want to treat the podcast like a therapy session and a way to get all my complaints out, but I don't.
Okay. You know, yeah.
I don't get to talk about this stuff that I do very much because I don't have any neighbors or family that's close to me that does what I do. And so I want to talk about the tens of tens. I want to talk about the comments. I want to talk about the money flow, but I don't. I compromise because there's other people listening.
Interesting. Okay, so this is going to get meta. I mean, you just you've made it get there. So I just, when you said that, I just thought about, you know, this is a great way for the three of us, for me, to be able to voice a lot of stuff that's on my mind, things I think about in relation to work and life and all that stuff, because I don't have a lot of other places that it makes sense to do it. I have people that I can talk to about things, but, you know, it's just, it makes sense to, for us to have this conversation. The compromise, I just now realized, is that other people in my life who cause situations listen to this podcast. And so even though I can talk to the two of you about a lot of things that I wouldn't have a place to talk to other people about, there is still this thing in the back of my head that says, meter what you're saying, censor what you're saying just enough to make sure that those people don't feel offended or don't feel dragged into a public conversation, because this is what this is. 100%. We had the same kind of thing with No Instructions. Like, we, Josh and I used to do that show all the time, and it got to a point to where my kids were listening to a podcast with me talking about my kids, and I'm like, wait a minute, like, I can't do this anymore. I can't talk freely about something when I know the audience is the people that I'm talking about. It's not, you know,
it's how Howard Stern got in trouble so much. He would always talk about Howard Stern would go to some celebrity event and he would talk about how he sees five people he was bagging on for the last 2 years. And that's why he just slowly started staying home and just stopped going places because everywhere
he went. So that he could have his show. That's interesting, though. I hadn't really thought about that. I mean, I think I felt that, but I didn't really think about that it was that I was having to, I don't know, change directions or censor or whatever a little bit.
Well, we do it. If there's only a few people that pay enough for the pre show. But if you're if you're in the pre show, you know, you hear us talk very freely about things and situations and partnerships and stuff. And then when we get on the show, we start talking in code.
Yeah,
it's true. I mean, I did it this morning.
We should charge like $500 a month for the pre show.
Yeah,
the boy, pre-pre-show. Would they be disappointed?
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah.
So it's a compromise that we have to.
The other compromise, and I did think about this morning, is having to be here at the same time every week. And I know that sounds like boo-hoo, like you have to go to work one day a week. Ugh. But the fact of the matter is, we are in charge of our own schedules, for better or worse. We can set our own times. And then as soon as you start to line up with anybody else to do a thing, you have to compromise your schedule a little bit. You have to find a time that where you can both meet.
Yeah, and everybody so, around even me knows though, Wednesday morning. The good thing is when we don't have a show, I have that Wednesday morning as a window portal. It's like, I don't exist.
It's just lost time. Yeah.
No, no, but I mean, I don't exist to the 30 people I deal with on a daily basis.
Yeah.
Because you're hidden, like, don't, for a while. Don't bother me from Wednesday morning 9 to to 11 or 9 to 12. So when we take a day off, I don't tell anybody. I don't tell anybody. I just go out in the shop and I just like take all my clothes off and work freely. 3 hours.
Oh, well, gross. But I think that is like, you know, there is a compromise in like not being fully in control of that one morning a week to come make time to do this. Same mm-hmm. thing. Forby and I meet on Monday mornings usually, and it's always useful and necessary and stuff, but there's still, it's just a set time to meet with anybody. It still feels like a compromise when you are in charge of your own stuff. You have a lot of stuff to do. You have schedules. You're trying to figure out how to get things done. And, you know, so having fixed points of, even like picking up kids from school and taking them to doctor's appointments, those are still fixed points that you have to kind of compromise your time around. So, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Mm-hmm. Other thoughts? Anything else?
Life is a compromise. Just try and compromise as many times as you want in your direction.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's good to be flexible. It's good to be able to meet people in the middle. I think, you know, having integrity around what's important to you is important, and knowing when bending too far is bending too far.
You know what it's like, as someone like me that's a people pleaser, I'm always making sure everybody's happy. I'm definitely, it's part of my whereas my one of my brothers, for instance, might be just like, nope, not doing that, and everyone's like, oh, but I'm like, well, he's got integrity, he doesn't compromise for anybody. Mm-hmm. But me, I'm always making sure everybody's happy. I'm a people pleaser, and when I don't have to do that, there's a certain sense of relief. It's a certain sense of relief that I don't notice until I'm there. It's kind of, this is an odd comparison, but you know, like when you're out on a boat all day long and you're on a boat, it's amazing. But when you get home, you're exhausted just from like your physical being of like jostled around, or even at a beach. Like when you're at a beach all day long in the sun, you're like, you're not doing anything. But when you get home, you're exhausted. Or when we do our events and we talk to 1,000 people, we're not doing anything but talking to somebody. But when you get home, you're exhausted. When you spend a day people-pleasing and making sure everybody's happy, like, and this isn't a bad thing, so if you've been to the go-kart event, don't think this, but I'm at the go-kart event, I want to make sure everybody's having a good time, I'm talking to everybody, and at the end of the day, I'm exhausted. But when I have a day where I don't have to talk to anybody, I have to make no compromises, I don't have to make sure everybody's happy, I'm like, wow, I can do whatever I want today. I don't have to talk to anybody. I could put my phone on silence, or even just leave it in the house, because these days, silence means vibrating, which means it's still answering. Still bugging you. I could leave my phone in my car and get to it later and be like, God, how many calls did I miss? And you look at it and you're like, 2 people called me. I'm thinking, like, I'm getting a phone call.
You're not wearing any clothes. There's no pockets to put your phone in anyway. So.
Well, I have places.
Oh.
Anyway. All right.
No. So I don't know what the bigger point was. I forgot my bigger point. But the idea of when you have a day off from people.
Yeah.
And you're not making
your energy gets expended differently when you're, when you're not trying to like,
So.
All right. Well, big thanks to our Patreon supporters.
Thank you.
They compromised their money so that we can do the show. That's pretty 100%. Fantastic thank of them. And we're grateful for the support, especially the top supporters. You know, it's the same group of people that's been there for a really long time. And that's amazing that they're willing to stick around and go above and beyond. Big thanks to Nick Ryan, Corey Ward, Albers Woodworks, Works by Solo, Chad from Mancrafting, Chad's Custom Creations, Rich at Low End Design, Odin Leather Goods, Sean Beckner, Scott at Dad It Yourself DIY, Jeff at the New Janky Workshop, Warren Works, Michael Menegin, and Crabtree Creative.
Thank you,
also,
guys.
People like, oh, I didn't bring the list up. I forgot to update the list. Also, people like, let me scroll down to somebody I've never said. Ooh, I cannot pronounce your name. Engen Ackerbot.
Oh.
I don't know how to say your name, and I apologize for that. But I am grateful for the support that you give us.
Thank you.
Engen? Engun.
Engen? Engen?
Engun?
Engen? Engen?
I don't know. Glad you're here, though. Thank you.
Thank you.
And everybody at all levels gets the after show, which is not the pre show and not the after show, but it is still after
the
show.
Those are very high tiers.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. Millions of dollars.
Yes. You have to email Bob directly to get access to those.
No, please don't say that. But everybody gets the after show that supports it at every level, even the $1 million level. So if you want to go over there and do that, you can go to patreon.com/makingit, join up, get the after show, help the show out. We would appreciate it.
No compromises in the after show.
That's right.
Because the people we worry about listening are not listening to the after show.
That's true.
That's true. Yeah. I don't have anything to recommend, so I'm going to find that while you guys recommend your stuff. Go!
I got something before Dave says it. Whistling Diesels. You haven't seen it? Were you going to say that, Dave?
No, I wasn't, but it's good. It's one of his fastest growing videos, I believe.
Yeah, Whistling Diesel... He did an endurance test on the Cybertruck, and surprisingly, even it's funny to see him genuinely surprised, because you could tell when he's just excited about he's making mayhem. But this time, he pulled the bumper off the truck, or somebody did. He was in the truck being towed. The truck was being towed off of a pile of rocks or something, and he did a comparison. He took the Cybertruck versus a Ford. And the Ford got stalled, so he used the Cybertruck to pull it, and it ripped the whole back bumper off. And that's like kind of turned into like the pivotal controversy of the video, because the truck's supposed to pull 11,000 pounds. It's not supposed to rip off the bumper. Like all the mooring points were aluminum welds. And anyway, it was a great video. It was good. I like that guy. He really makes me laugh. I just hope he doesn't kill himself.
No kidding.
He'll get hurt. Hopefully he never does, but. When you do so many dangerous things like that, your guard is so down that he'll get hurt by like accidentally stepping in front of a moving car, like something really dumb, really dumb. So, I just hope he doesn't kill himself, because he's a natural entertainer, even though he's going so far over the top to make us laugh. But when you see his old videos when he was at his farmhouse, and I think he was in Indiana, he's just goofing around with just used cars, and the entertainment level was nearly as fun.
There you go. All I can think of is how much income are they making to buy a new car every month to do these tests? It's insane.
It doesn't seem likely, but I guess he's selling a lot of merch. That's really where the big
he must
is.
Be.
Yeah. I thought about buying one of his sweatshirts. He did this thing where a lot of the people complained about the price, and this is a whole other conversation where Made in America, you want to get stuff made in America? Everyone's like, Made in America, Made in America. It's going to cost you five times more. Mm-hmm. And then when you put it on your website, people are like, this is so expensive. Like, you want Made in America, it's Made in America, it's expensive. So he did a whole website, Made in America, and another website, Made in China. He's like, you want prices to be cheaper? There's the Chinese website. So I was prompted to try and buy something, but I didn't. I compromised myself out of it. No, okay. I'll probably buy something.
I got two of them since we missed last week. The one is this, it's a channel called Make Art Not Content, which I think is a beautiful channel title. But the video that I want to share is called Prince's Work Ethic. And it's just like, it's all about how Prince was just made stuff every single day, recorded whole albums in a month that just got put in the vault. And
wow,
was just a creativity machine. And the channel is pretty inspiring, but this video is just phenomenal. So there's one. And then the other one is, it's by the Open Press Project, which is a YouTube channel / Kickstarter / website. But they apparently, I just discovered this, but apparently they had this little mini printing press that was open source where you could download the files or you could buy one. And there was a demand for a bigger press to do postcards. And so I came across this video and I thought, this looks fun. And I think a lot of our audience would enjoy this.
Cool. I haven't watched much lately, but I did watch Tyler Bell's new video where he made an action movie sequence and like did all of the special effects, like in camera practical effects for explosions and gunfire and stuff. And he's having a blast. Like it's,
yeah,
you can tell that he's having a really good time replicating that stuff and figuring out how to, you know, shoot little sequences and make it look like an action movie and everything. I just really like Tyler. So, yeah, go check it out. It's fun. It's cool to see him do special effects stuff, and I think his channel is definitely moving in that direction where he's just replicating special effects stuff.
And talking about views, his channel, every video he does should be viral.
Yes, I agree.
He makes great content to the point where everything should be a viral video, or at least up in the hundreds of thousands.
Yeah, I agree. Cool. Well, you guys got anything else for this week?
I think that's it. We're going to go back to bed in the after show.
All right, cool.
I got to wait for my alarm to go off at 7:30 tonight.
Well, thanks for listening, everybody, and we'll see you next time.
Thank you. Love you.